Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Happy New Year, everyone, and you're on Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof. If you don't know, that's Spurty and Andrew and Joy. And welcome to our new time slot, which is every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock.
It certainly is. Yeah, we've moved over from Monday to Tuesday.
We've been promoted.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, and that track was what, Andrew?
That was Casting Crowns, Courageous.
Yeah, it was a great track.
Yeah, I love it.
So if you don't normally listen on a Tuesday night, welcome to the show. And we might want to just tell everyone what Spirit Lounge is about, shall we? Just very quickly.
We can do that.
Far away.
Oh, Andrew, go.
Actually, do you know, we don't know what it's about.
No, I'm very confused.
No, we talk about spirituality and issues of faith. And how that kind of relates to our everyday lives.
And how we can integrate our sexuality and our spirituality. Because for many of us, we've been told that we can't be gay and be Christian or be spiritual or be Buddhist or be whatever it is that we want to be. And so here we are to tell you that you can be Buddhist and gay. You can be Christian and gay. It's okay.
Absolutely. And we invariably have lots of wonderful guests on our show from amazingly different walks of life, and not just from Australia, but from people from overseas too, just giving their perspective on life and sharing their experiences with us too. So stick with us. We're only here for an hour. It goes very quickly. I'm losing my voice. Excuse me.
Yeah, join in the conversation. 0427 Joy 949, or you can ring Jerry on 1300 Joy 949, or email on air at joy.org.au, or if you've got the app, do whatever you do with an app. I know, it's so technical. And shortly in the show, Andrew will tell you about all the other technical things we have.
Which the Priest and Pom don't understand. So we're known as the Priest, the Pom and the Poof. We're the three Ps, and we're here every Tuesday on Spirit Lounge from 9 till 10. So tonight we have a special guest called Michelle Grimshaw, who the Priest is going to tell us about in a minute. And later on, when we have another chit-chat on our couch in our lounge, we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions.
And all the ones we haven't said.
Yeah. And also the tradition of New Year and how it came to be.
We will. Michelle Grimshaw is someone I actually met at a conference, and the conference was pretty boring, but I went to a workshop on rituals and how you can help communities recover, particularly bushfire communities, recover with the use of rituals, and I thought it would be interesting, and she was absolutely amazing. So we asked her to come on the show and to talk, share a little bit about her story, because she has an amazing story, and that's what we're going to hear tonight. And then next week she's going to talk about grief and about ritual. So here is the first part of Michelle Grimshaw's interview.
We have Michelle Grimshaw with us this evening, graduated from University of Melbourne with a Bachelor of Social Work in 1992, and published a research paper on the role of mourning ritual for a group of gay men with HIV/AIDS in the same year. Her interest in the role of ritual as a therapeutic tool stemmed from her work with disenfranchised grief and multiple losses at the Victorian AIDS Council, and was developed further in her role as clinical coordinator at the Australian Centre for Grief and Bereavement. For the past 12 years, Michelle has worked as a private practitioner, providing counselling, supervision and writing counselling practical protocols, that's difficult to say, with senior practitioners in the loss, grief and trauma field. She also works at the Queer Counselling Service in Drummond Street. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Can we, first of all, because we like to get to know our guests before we talk about your specific discipline.
Before we grill them.
Before you, we grill
them through the ringer.
Before we grill you professionally. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing, and was there any religious content to that, and about your views on spirituality.
Oh, how long have we got?
Long as you like.
All night.
all night. A little bit about my upbringing. Well, I was born in England.
A
fellow Pom, north of Manchester. In fact, I've just read Jeanette Winterson's fabulous biography, Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal, and discovered that I was born in the same town, a matter of streets away from where she lived, and our prams would have passed each other, literally.
Wow.
And that was really, it was really confronting and also very sort of rewarding, yeah, because I've always loved her work.
How old were you when you left? Did you have a good enough memory that you could relate to some of her book?
Absolutely, yes. Mm. But I was nearly five when I left, but I've had quite a few trips back there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, relived it through the lives of my parents who, you know, often have the photos out. And
yeah.
I know the town quite well. But anyway, we won't go into that list. But she's a fascinating person and shares the same birthplace. And then we migrated to Adelaide, where I grew up with my family, mum and dad, and my gorgeous brother,
mm-hmm.
who's 18 months younger. And we grew up in a Catholic family where mum was Catholic and dad wasn't, and attended Mass every week and went mm-hmm. to Catholic primary and secondary school until the 70s, when the Catholic charismatic movement, or if you like, the Pentecostal arm of the church, mm-hmm. sort of took off, and mum got quite involved and I got quite involved too. And that was a real changing point in my spiritual life and in my family's spiritual life, as mum mm-hmm. left the Catholic Church and then eventually went on to Assemblies of God and so forth. And I, meanwhile, had hooked up with the Church of Christ. Prior to that, I'd been in the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. This is a long
quite
story.
Quite ecumenical, weren't you?
But
she can make her mind up.
Try them all.
And all this time, of course, you know, sort of struggling with same-sex attraction
mm-hmm.
and not having a lot spoken about it in the Catholic Church, but certainly really for the first time hearing a lot about it through the Pentecostal movement, if you like, or the more fundamentalist.
And was that in a positive light or not such a positive light?
No, definitely not in a positive light. But more in a kind of a sinister, mysterious, you just don't go there.
Well, it's a sickness and you're sinning.
That's right, but not overtly spoken about, but much more sort of, yeah, there weren't any gays and lesbians in the church, put it that way.
Mm.
That were willing to say they were gay.
Exactly, yes, thanks for clarifying that, Joy. And so I became, in terms of my spiritual life, while I kind of hooked into the, it was the era of, it was the 70s, Godspell, Sister Janet Mead, Rock Mass, Our
Make
Father.
Make Love, Not War.
Yeah, lots of clapping and singing in church, singing Joni Mitchell songs, you know, in church, in Mass. All this was right up my alley. And I, you know, I became incredibly confronted by what was happening to my mum, who suddenly came home speaking in tongues and praying over us in tongues in a very nice, generous, caring way, mm-hmm. not at all proselytizing or anything like that. But I suddenly, on reflection, looked back and thought, gee, my mum's speaking in tongues, so the church she must be going to, because I'd stopped going, must hold the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, it must hold the truth. So what they're saying must be right, because if it isn't, how come all these people are being healed and speaking in tongues? I'm 17, 18, 20,
mm-hmm.
struggling with this, struggling.
Mm. And your mum is still a great influence at that age, isn't she?
So what she says must
have some truth to it and must be right.
And the fact was, she wasn't actually saying much. I was observing the changes in her. I mean, she came to life in this church. and so I'm thinking, well, if what they're saying is true, maybe I am going to hell. And so my faith became fear.
Yeah.
I'm sure listeners will relate to this.
Yes.
For many years. So I had the struggle between, I had a fearful faith. I had a faith that, you know, I had an inner spiritual life that would chug along and then go, oh, my God.
What a great way to actually, a great name. That's a great name for it. And we hear this so often, don't we, Joy?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Mm, so just as you think, you know, you've got a handle on it, because you have, you know, I had to read a lot. I had to really try and steady myself. When I least expected it, it would come up and bite me. So, for example, when I had a child, 12 and a bit years ago, I didn't have an easy birth experience. And in fact, anyway, I won't go into that, but there was a point where I felt that I would die. And post-birth, I was taken back into hospital with an unknown illness. Mm-hmm. And it was 2-3 weeks down the track that they realised that my appendix had ruptured. But by this time, I was so grossly ill. And the father of my child, a wonderful gay man friend of mine, his partner happened to be an Anglican priest, and he came in and gave me the last rites almost. And during this time, all of this came back to me.
Wow.
And I, quite unexpectedly, I started to think, maybe I'm being punished. Maybe they're right. Maybe, and wow. And so it really makes you, you know, it really took me back, and I thought, you know, I've really got to do some work. So I did my most profound spiritual development probably around 12 and a half years ago. I thought, I'm going to go under with this or I'm going to survive.
And that was a beautiful voice of Ida Marie with When I Say I Love You. And you're on Spirit Lounge with the priest, the pom and the poof. And if you want to join in the conversation and tell us your New Year's resolution so we can tell everyone, well, anyone that's listening, SMS us 0427JOY949, or you can email us onair@joy.org.au. And tonight we're talking with Michelle Grimshaw.
Your story is fascinating because what's that that's showing is if you let it, it will continue to haunt you unless you face it and actually do something about it.
That's right.
It was still lurking there, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And the first 18 months of my child's life were not just difficult because you've got a new baby, but emotionally, I really left the planet. And it was only through getting a hold of readings by Dorothy McRae McMahon and also talking to someone I met through the Anglican Church in Clifton Hill who helped ground me and said things to me like, you know, Michelle, people speak in tongues in other religions. You know, there are Muslims who speak in tongues in mosques. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I started to get grounded.
Yeah.
So what would it be? It's 30 years later. It was still sitting there, this fear.
How did your view of God change?
Well, I had to really harness the loving God, and I had to bring out every example I could for myself to reconcile that if I was going to hold a relationship with God, that had to be a loving God, and surely this would not be a God who would, you know, condemn to hell all of my wonderful peers and friends and whoever else in the community that wasn't socially acceptable, whether they be people who were having sex outside of marriage or... So Reverend John Spong, is it John Spong? Yeah.
Bishop, sorry.
It is John, isn't it? Yeah. His readings helped me, and I read thoroughly on what the Bible really has to say about homosexuality. And, like you, Joy, as we mentioned earlier, I went to study theology, systematic theology and other subjects that really, really helped. I wonder how many gays and lesbians study theology just to get it together in terms of, you know, what the Bible actually says and where you stand.
Probably,
you know,
more than we think, actually.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to have a talk back.
But it only works if you actually go to a more liberal
college. That's right. Yeah,
college.
That's true.
And
yeah.
I was actually in a Pentecostal church when I decided to go and study, and they advised me against going to the college I did because they said it was too liberal.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, this is a
That's
college
where
for
I'm
me.
I'm off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The longer we do this program, the more stories we hear like yours, and where the people's journey about trying to reconcile the religion side of it, the sexuality side of it, does God still love me? I don't want to be rejected. How can I fit it all into my life? And I think this era that we're talking about, kind of, I would say 60s up until probably not that long ago and still now, this is still happening. People are still just trying to find peace in their own spirituality with it all, actually, and their own soul.
That's right. It was an incredibly I can't put a time of suffering, a dark night of the soul, went on for a couple of years. There you go, as do the clearing the throat when it gets up. But my dear father, who's since died, I remember one evening, and because I was visiting mum and dad, I was actually staying with them because I was so anxious. I felt that I couldn't care for my child properly, and which I could. And he said to me, I was sitting up late with him one night because, you know, at this stage he hadn't joined any of the churches that mum had raised us in. And I said, I'm so, so confused. He said to me, Michelle, think about what you're going through in terms of your lifestyle. God gave you a brain. Use it. You know, and I just remember that. He sort of asked me to bring intellect and rationale, you know. Mm. And at this time, my mother was incredibly supportive and not saying, look, don't worry about what the church says. Just be yourself. But it was me. I couldn't reconcile what I'd seen. I had to work it out for myself. It wasn't enough that she said, look, you're okay. God loves everyone. And I'm okay with it. It was these groups of people in the church who I quite sort of had respected and even admired in my youth.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And this is our new slot from 9 till 10 on a Tuesday. We've moved from a Monday and Joy thinks we've been promoted, but you just keep thinking that, honey. And that was, what's her full name, darling?
Catherine Dawn.
I told you it was Catherine Dawn Lang.
Oh, KD sounds much better.
Does it? That was KD Lang and the Sis Boom Bang album Sing It Loud, which is the title track, which is all rather gorgeous. And in case you've just joined us and you don't know us, the priest sitting to my left is absolutely mental about KD Lang, and given any opportunity, she will play her music. So she's allowed to, we're indulging her tonight, and then that will be it for quite a long time, okay?
Excuse me, I chose one KD Lang track for tonight. Someone else chose two others.
I did.
And it wasn't Andrew.
I know, because I felt like being nice to you.
Oh, garbage. Tristan's enjoying himself. He's sitting in front of the air conditioning with a glass of wine listening to us.
Good evening, Tristan. Welcome to the show if you haven't listened to us before. And if you are a loyal follower, it's lovely to have you here on a Tuesday.
And enjoy that glass of wine.
And enjoy. I'm terribly jealous because, of course, I'm on the wagon until the 25th.
We'll talk about that later.
Horrible, horrible. I mean, I already want a glass of wine. Now, we're going to rejoin our lovely interview that we did just before Christmas with Michelle Grimshaw. Mm. Now, Michelle, part of your work is obviously at the Queer Counselling Service in Drummond Street, and you were just saying earlier how rewarding you find that work and how much you enjoy it. What do you do there, and what's so rewarding about working in the GLBTI community?
Oh, I love it there. What I do is I'm only there for limited hours, but I see couples and individuals for all range of issues or concerns or challenges, but particularly couples around relationship issues, conflict, enhancing communication, and individuals around sexuality and identity. I guess that's the main issue. Mm. And why do I love it? Because I see people who've walked the walk that I once walked, and then I have to challenge myself with sitting in a very neutral place and drawing on all my skills and learning about what may be helpful for them at this particular time, at this particular developmental stage that they're at with their challenge. Mm-hmm. So it challenges me intellectually, personally. It gives me that feeling that that my own experience has a legacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I can sit and empathise.
Yeah.
And I choose to disclose appropriately when I do, with some people saying, yeah, no, I've had a spiritual crisis, or yes, I've faced that dilemma. So, yes, it offers me that opportunity to sit with people who also, in my experience, haven't always had the best reception, if you like, in generalist counselling services. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they haven't had good enough counselling, but oftentimes they'll have to explain the nature of their relationship or how they came to have children or you know, and there's all sorts of relationships people are having.
You're naturally on their wavelength.
She knows about how people have children. She doesn't need that explained.
Now, we're not going into the birds and bees now. Come on.
Oh, Brett, another program.
Now, Michelle, you also, talking of birds and bees.
Yeah, exactly.
You also work for the Animal Loss Support Network. I don't know how you pack all this in.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do with the Animal Loss Support Network?
Well, look, what I have done in the past is obviously seen people who are grieving the death of their pet, their companion animal. And oftentimes people would ring me and say, oh, I don't know how to work with this area. You know, I'm only used to working with people. You know, what? You know, and it's grief and it's disenfranchised grief because, of course, you're constantly hit with, oh, well, it's only a dog or it's only a, you know, people not understanding that grief is essentially about attachment.
Mm-hmm. It's a bond, isn't it?
And a broken bond, whether it be a person, an animal. You know, it's a broken bond, physically broken, not spiritually broken. Mm. That's part of the work. So I would see people in counselling, and then as a friend who worked at the Australian Centre for Grief and Bereavement set up a support group at RSPCA in Burwood, so I'd refer people there. So in terms of the network, I'm just one of the people in the network, and there's many people out there. But sadly, you know, it's one of the most under-resourced areas in pet bereavement. And I've done a few seminars for vet nurses and vets about just simple things on how they can manage people grieving in their practice. And, you know, it's interesting what we've learnt in terms of handling, you know, human mourning. It hasn't transferred to veterinary practices. So, for example, you know, you'd never rock up at, say, a crematorium. No, not a crematorium. Let me think of a different example. Let me tell you this. So when people, as you may have had this experience yourself, you know, it's like you've had your animal cremated. And I was just thinking about creative ritual. And, you know, you'll get a call saying, oh, you can pick up the ashes any time. They're here, they're returned to the vet practice. And you come in and you think, you know, doing something quite simple. And it's the middle of the day and there's people in the waiting room and you just get really emotional. Well, some people do. They take their little tin and they're caught unawares. You wouldn't be expected to do that in a public hospital. It's just not allowed, you know. And if you did, and it's not possible anyway because they don't do cremations there, you know, there'd be someone nearby or you'd be asked to come in. Perhaps you could be asked to come in together at the same time, 6 till 7 on a Wednesday evening. You'd be with other people who are going through the same thing. You could have a counsellor there and a cup of tea and a pamphlet available and told about a group or something. You know, just the simplest of things, you know, being present at euthanasias and how to make that a little easier.
And welcome back to the KD Lang Fest. I mean it's the Spirit Lounge. It's the Spirit Lounge.
I bet KD Lang would love us.
She would. I hope she's listening. Hi, KD.
We love you. I was going to put down on the sheet that KD Lang was Australian.
That's a big fat lie.
But I can't. Well, but she loves Australia. She's nearly Australian.
I think you'll find that her birth certificate and her passport are Canadian, don't you?
Oh, yeah. No, it's just a small little hiccup,
little
isn't
detail.
It?
Anyway, welcome. You are on the Spirit Lounge. We're on a Tuesday night now from 9 till 10. We've been promoted from Monday. Joy just makes us smile, the word promotion. You like that word, don't you?
I do.
And you're with the priest, the palm and the poof. We are going to have a good old chinwag now about what I call hogmanay.
Oh, these blinking Scots.
Do you know what that means?
Not really, no.
There's this great look of...
Is that where you have haggis?
No, that's Burns Night. There's this great look of disinterest in the studio, people. We were just going to have a look at New Year's Eve and the traditions and the celebrations. And, of course, being a Scot and having done my research, it looks like New Year was probably nearly invented. Modern day New Year was invented in Scotland.
Nearly.
Are you going to go with that?
Yeah, we'll give you that one. They didn't have anything else interesting, and so we might as well.
There's a million different different answers on the internet about how Hogmanay came to be the name, but actually the most common, and remember the French and the Scots had the old alliance, they were great buddies for a very long time because they all hated the English, and actually homme est né, or man is born in French, they think that's probably the closest reason for Hogmanay okay. being Om-e-ni. Yeah, so we think it comes from the French. But the Scots inherited all those celebrations from the Vikings, of course, because the Vikings invaded Scotland in the 8th, 9th century. And the Vikings always celebrated the winter solstice, which was basically the passing of the longest night and the shortest day. And they had pagan festivals and, excuse me, bonfires were lit and kept alight all night to ward off evil spirits and to encourage the sun to return. So fire actually was the significant element, which is the origin of our fireworks and our torchlight processions today. And Hogmanay is also known as the Night of the Candle. So there seems to be quite a lovely kind of, you know, continuity there in terms of the fire. But for ages, Scotland didn't celebrate Christmas because it was banned by the Protestant Reformation. The church, which were Calvinism at the time, believed Christmas to be a popish or Catholic feast, and therefore it must be banned.
Plus, the Calvinists didn't like anyone having any fun.
No, they didn't. They were a dour old lot, as they say in Scotland, very dour. So, but eventually, in modern day, of course, Christmas became a huge festival because, A, the influence of the church waned, I think, and secondly, you know, international cultural festivals and celebrations just become part of our world, don't they? But there are lots of traditions, and I know it's interesting doing the research. Some of these traditions are repeated in other countries, which is also really interesting because I didn't know that. But in Scotland, they say in the old days, they used to have to clean out their houses on the 31st because that was believed to be a purification ritual. And they used to burn juniper branches, which they carried throughout the house to remove any germs and diseases. And they used to throw out the old ash because in those days, of course, they had real fires. And so they would throw out the ash. I mean, hopefully you would do that every day if you had a real fire, but throw out the ash and put in the new. And so it was all about getting rid of the old and looking forward to the new kind of thing. And the other thing, now this is very Scottish, is of course to clear all your debts before the bells at midnight.
Go down the pub and pay the
go down and
tab.
Pay whoever you need to pay, who might be sitting in the pub as well, I suppose. Oh, that was cheeky, wasn't it?
Probably.
And the famous one, of course, still practiced today, is immediately after midnight, everyone sings Auld Lang Syne, which translated means for old time's sake, and of course written by Robbie Burns, which is Scotland's most famous poet. Andrew is looking at me completely glazed over, darling, aren't you? I'm going to have to give you a Scottish history lesson.
Our New Year's tradition, Eve tradition, is to watch the military tattoo, of course, where they sing Auld Lang Syne.
Do you have what, in New Zealand?
It's on TV here in Australia at 7:30 on New Year's Eve.
What, the one that happens in Edinburgh in Scotland?
Yes.
They replay it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I thought you meant you had your own military tattoo in New Zealand.
No, we always watch the
Oh, isn't that extraordinary? I never knew that.
It's on every New Year's Eve.
Oh, wow.
And of course, they sing Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah. And the other thing that they still do nowadays is what they call first footing. Now, this was in the day where communities lived in their little villages. No one had any cars. They might have horses and carts, but that'd be all. And what you would do in the old days, a tall, dark stranger should be the person to knock on the door and walk over your threshold, and that would bring you good luck. Because if a tall, blonde stranger walks through, it's probably a Viking. So a tall, dark stranger, and that's trouble, isn't it? So a tall, dark stranger. And so that's the old tradition. But of course, nowadays, friends all do that, and you take some gifts, and everyone goes first footing, which basically is a house crawl, drinking all your mate's booze.
And everyone dyes their hair, so that if they're blonde.
I think I want to get like onto that tradition.
They don't want to look like a Viking.
Now, listen, I want to go to Denmark.
Why?
Because in Denmark, they save their old dishes throughout the year. They obviously go to the Boxing Day sales and buy a whole lot of new ones. And then the old ones they take and they break them and they heap them up at someone's door.
That sounds more like Greek to Danish.
Yeah, but if you get lots and lots of broken dishes at your door, it means you've got lots and lots of friends. So I don't know if they actually throw them at the door, because then you might have a broken door. And that's not very friendly.
You might have a broken face if you happen to open the door as well.
Yeah, that's very strange, but could be fun.
Now, the actually, talking of Greece, because, of course, 1st of January is St. Basil's Day in Greece. And St. Basil was one of the forefathers of the Greek Orthodox Church. So he was very charitable and very kind and very generous to the poor. And he's thought to have died on that day, so they honour him. So that's, St. Basil's Day. Andrew, which is your favourite one?
My favourite one is the Dutch tradition, where everybody takes their Christmas trees out onto the street and piles up big bonfires and kind of use the Christmas stuff to celebrate the new year coming
through. That's one way of getting rid of your Christmas tree.
It is. Yeah, that's quite.
It's my favourite one.
And actually, this is very odd, because I did giggle at this name. In Hungary, they burn effigies or a scapegoat known as Jack Straw, which represented the evils and misfortunes of the past year to burn on New Year's Eve. Jack Straw is carried around the village before being burnt. I was just thinking to myself, imagine if your family name was Straw, and then you were a boy and you
were
named...
You'd never call them Jack.
Jack. I mean, you no. just wouldn't... You'd have to move, wouldn't you? You'd have to go and live somewhere else.
And finally, I like the Spanish and Portuguese, because they pick and eat 12 grapes from a bunch, one with every toll as the clock strikes, to bring luck and happiness in the coming year. And often they will have wine to wash the grapes down.
That sounds very civilised.
That's why you like that one.
I didn't.
Yes. It's something to do with the wine.
Tristan, I hope you're eating grapes with your wine.
Yes.
We're going to have another track now, and this is a track selected by Andrew.
Yeah, this one's called Remind Me Who I Am by Jason Gray.
And you've been on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof. And coming up is Sonia, who's going to talk about Doctor Who versus Harry Potter. So stay tuned. I'll certainly be listening to that on the way home to find out the story. And we're going to finish with the fabulous track by Katie Lang.
Oh, let me guess, which one is that? Perhaps is it?
And I promise we won't have any more Katie Lang for at least 1 month.
Yes, and if
thank you.
If you're listening for the first time, yeah, that's a promise. Will you please promise on air?
I do promise.
Okay, thank you.
And we're going to finish with the beautiful track by Katie Lang of Hallelujah, and tune in next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.